swear. And they would just know. And they would come in my room together, which was always bad. And they would sit me down and they'd be like, was there booze at this party? And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, I don't drink. And they knew that I was, you know. So I'm a bad liar, but I continued to do it anyway. And I remember when I got sober, I was like, why didn't you guys ever tell me that you knew, you know? And they needed for me to take my own path. And not once did they ever threaten to take me to treatment, which is what I'm planning on doing with my children, you know. You know, like one sign of them coming home drunk and I'm sending them off. And that's the plan for now, at least, you know. But my parents knew, you know, from 26 and 16 years of sobriety that it didn't really matter. I wasn't going to be done until I was done. And so I kept getting caught and I kept getting grounded. And it got to the point where I had to pass a drug test to leave the house. And I could never do that. And so I'd be grounded for like 30-day stretches at a time, get one glimpse of freedom and be back grounded. And I was never smart enough to like get somebody else's pee or like, you know, like I could never do, like I hear stories, you know, and I was never that smart. I wasn't like my brother who was like completely stealth and like got away with everything. And like he would be grounded for like years and still end up getting high. And like, I was never that brilliant, you know, and I still lack common sense to this day, but you know, he was always really smart, and I just wanted to be like him, and he would never let me drink with him, and I couldn't understand why. And I think because when I was about that age, when I wanted to, he was already sober, and he was like 15 at the time. But anyways, when I stopped wanting to get in trouble, I started to clean up my act a little bit. I don't feel like I was at that point where there was no return. I was only like drinking far and few between, and I didn't really understand what it could do for me. And so I cleaned up my act and I stopped wanting to be grounded. So I dedicated my entire focus to school, and it's just my personality to be addicted to something. I was addicted with getting away with it, and I clearly failed. So I was going to be now addicted to school and doing what I needed to do to not be grounded. And somewhere along the way, I got involved with cheerleading. And that helped with me not doing drugs and stuff, because these girls were like so focused and dedicated on this competition cheerleading. And it gave me a huge sense of purpose, you know, and I was a part of something. I still felt like I was like standing alone in a room full of people, but on the outside it still looked like I fit in. And I started to really kind of feel whole inside when I was doing cheerleading. And one day on a resentment, I decided that I was going to up and quit this team, and it was like in the middle of my senior year. I was going to get a full ride to like go to college to do this, and I was working, going to school and doing cheerleading, and I was like, something's got to give, and I was just like running my own life into the ground, and I cursed out a couple of people at the cheerleading gym and left with disgrace, you know, and I still get choked up when I think about it, because I loved cheerleading, and it was like everything to me, and it gave me something. You know, and so I left in complete disgrace, and I cussed out people that really cared about me, and I'm not even allowed to go there to make the amends that I need to make. You know, but that's just something I got to deal with. That's something I'm going to have to live with. And, you know, when I quit cheerleading, everything in my life started to spiral out. Like, I was going crazy all the time, and I got Baker acted in that time period. And I wasn't doing drugs and I wasn't drinking, you know what I mean? I just needed one. And I got Baker acted on Christmas of 2006. So I was like 16. And I don't know, like I couldn't seem to get a grip on reality. And I wanted to die like all the time. And I just felt completely alone. And so what ended up happening was I just became like this huge loner at school. And I couldn't talk to anybody. And everybody just thought I was like, you know, like a B-I-T-C-H. Like, everybody thought that, like, I was mean. Gotcha, sponsor. And, you know, like, I couldn't make any friends because I couldn't connect anymore. And I had nothing to give. And so I started to focus more on school, and I started to look into colleges. And at this time, I felt like everybody knew where they were going to go. I felt like everybody knew their plan of action. And my parents were just kind of like, do whatever you want, you know? And I was like, I don't know what I want. I don't know how to do this. And I felt like so lost. And I ended up getting into a college after I graduated over the summer. And I got into a school that didn't check records because at this time I had a record. Nobody wanted me to have a record at their school because I hadn't turned 18 yet. And I went to a college here in town for something I really didn't want to do. I just wanted to leave the town I was in and get out of my mom's house. So I just left him my first opportunity. And I don't know what sparked this interest in me, but I started to realize that I was going to be able to drink now because I'm not living at my mom's and nobody's taking, you know, drug tests on me. Nobody's telling me what to do. And I was still calling my mom almost every day to check in. And when I started to drink, it was like farther and fewer between that I would check in with my mom. And she was wondering what was wrong with me. And, you know, I would make up excuses like I got a new boyfriend or, you know, I'm just working a lot. But really, I was just getting drunk. And it was something, it was almost like I needed to do this to fit in. And it wasn't until I was in my second year of college that I started to become almost a daily drinker. And it started to become something that I needed. And at no point in my mind did I think that this was going to be something I needed. I just wanted to fit in with people. And it's in my blood. You know, I feel like I was born an alcoholic. I feel like if I let myself drink for long enough, it would have happened eventually. You know, and I don't know, like, I didn't want to become a drinker because I knew my potential of being an alcoholic. And I didn't want to have to go to AA, and I didn't want to have to live like my mother. And at this point, I really hated my mom. And she was telling me things like, maybe you should call your brother. And this means that I should probably talk to him about AA. And I wasn't talking to my brother because I knew that he would want me to come to a meeting, or that's what I thought. And I eventually got up the nerve to call my brother and tell him what was going on and that I couldn't stop drinking. And he would tell me things like, maybe you should go to AA. And at this point, I was like drunk all the time. And those conversations probably happened a lot more than I knew about. And I started to dwindle down to have one friend. I at first, drinking, it seemed like drinking helped me to make friends and helped me show up for life. And towards the end, I had nobody, you know, and I was incapable of showing up for life. And at one point, I decided that I was never going to go to class drunk. And in the end, I needed to be drunk to be there. And I don't know, like, when that changed. And somehow I still passed all my classes. I was getting really bad grades, though, like C's and D's. And my parents were like, what's wrong with you? You know, and I couldn't come up with any explanation because I couldn't tell them the truth. And I've been lying to everybody in my life. I didn't even know what the truth was, you know. And because I was in such denial of my condition, I didn't think that I was going to be an alcoholic. And my whole time when I was drinking, I wanted to beat the game. I didn't want to be part of my family dynamic and be alcoholic. But it was inevitable, and I started to realize that a few months before I admitted it to myself out loud. And when I was drinking, I used to journal for some reason. And that's scary, you know, because when I read them now, I knew I was alcoholic. I knew I didn't have the potential to stop drinking on my own. But I could never say that to anybody because then they would want me to stop. You know, and it's like that today. Like, I can't get honest with my sponsor until I'm ready to change my actions because I know she's going to want me to change. And that's what it was. I couldn't get honest because somebody was going to tell me I either needed to limit it or stop altogether. And I didn't want that at all. You know, so when I got up the nerve to ask my brother to help me get to AA, I called him, and it was like in one of those like suicide moments, like the jumping off point. And I wanted to die more than I had ever wanted to die. And I had come to the conclusion that I couldn't stop drinking on my own. But I wanted to. But I didn't know how. And I called him kind of late at night. And he called me back in the morning. And he was like, what's going on? And I was like, I think I need to go to a meeting. You know, and he was like, okay, let's go. You know, and he took me to a meeting that night, I think, when I got out of class. And he took me to Club 3333. At 10 o'clock, and I was with, like, Martin, and Billido was there, and there were a whole bunch of people there that are still here now, and I didn't know what to think. You know, like, I'm sitting in my brother's house, and it was Ronnie's house, and I'm like, what are these people doing? They're, like, breakdancing, they're going off the wall, and, you know, and they all seem really happy, and I was just so miserable, you know? Like, I didn't want to live, and I didn't want to die, and I was confused. But they took me to this meeting, and I got in the car with them, and they set me up to talk to this girl, and I don't know if she's here. It was Kaylin, and she's like, what are you doing here? And I was like, I don't know, you know. I don't know what I'm doing here. I'm just here, and I guess I want to stop drinking, you know. And she started telling me about some stuff that was going on with her, and I was, like, really, like, intensely, like, I was so petrified for her. And so I go in this meeting, and a couple people were there. I think Katie was there, and Kitty was there. And I got this phone list, and they hand it to me, and I'm, like, getting ready to sign it. And they're like, no, that's for you. And I was like, okay. And I still have it. I still have that where and when with all those phone numbers. But I didn't call any of them, you know. And they did what they do here, and they got my phone number. And Katie was blowing me up, like, every single day. And I was like, what's this girl's problem, you know? Like, I don't even know her, and she's calling me, like, every day. And I'm talking to my brother about this, and he's like, just call her back, you know? And I'm like, I don't want to. I don't even like her. And, you know, and it just seemed like I wasn't able to connect. And so I didn't want to connect, and I didn't want to get sober, you know? And but at the same time, I kind of did. So eventually she kind of conned me into having her as my sponsor, and I didn't know what that meant. But she kept taking me through the book. Like, she kept reading the book to me, and I'm just, like, at awe with the book, you know, because she told me to read the doctor's opinion, and I was like, I don't think I'm going to be able to do this. And I started reading the doctor's opinion, and I could not even read at this point. Like, I was so fuzzy, and, like, I couldn't even think straight. But when we read it together and she read it to me, I started to identify with that whole idea of not being able to stop once I started. And the whole idea of not being able to quit and stay quit, you know, and I related. I related to the doctor's opinion. I related to more about alcoholism. I related all the way. There was no question. But I wasn't ready. I don't feel like I wanted this bad enough. And I stayed sober for the first time for like 5 days. I got pulled over on the way home from a meeting, and I was pissed off, and I just let that get me, and I went back out. And in the meantime, I'd be on the phone with my sponsor in between relapses being like, I'm not alcoholic. I just need you to co-sign this so I can go drink. And she would never do that. She would just be like, you're alcoholic. You're going to come back. And I was like, I don't want to. You have to pick up. She told me I had to pick up 7 white chips every time I relapsed. I couldn't even get to 7 before I was relapsing again. And, you know, it was like crazy. And I couldn't put any length of time together. And we kept getting to 1, 2, and 3. And she'd tell me to do the 4-step, and I would drink. And I got, at one point, I had gotten, like, 58 days sober. And I was, like, 2 days away from that 60-day chip. You know, and I had never been sober that long, and I was very excited to be an Alcoholics Anonymous, at least to get the chip. And, you know, but you would still see me sitting by myself right up here when everybody is outside, like, talking and get to know each other before the meeting. I'd still be up here sitting by myself, pissed off to be here, you know, and not really wanting it. And so when I was, like, 58 days sober, I moved home with my mom because I thought that it was my living environment. And that's why I couldn't stay sober. Meanwhile, nobody I live with gets high. Nobody I live with drinks. But I thought it was because I couldn't get sober in that room. I don't know. So I moved home with my mom because I think it's going to hold me more accountable to not relapse. And within 2 days of living there, I came home drunk. And with every intention, I wanted to stay sober. You know, and I hung out with somebody that I used to hang out with in high school just to catch up, let him know I was sober, and, you know, tell him all about AA. I think I probably made an amends at that point. I was like on step 3, you know, and I was kind of digging the idea, but I didn't understand that it required work. And so I made that amends to him, I guess, or whatever, and we go back to his place. And there's all these people there from my high school that I haven't seen in years. And I don't know. It was like automatically I was disconnected. I had nothing in common with them. And I was just there. And they started to drink, you know. And I was like telling them all about AA and that I was in AA and that I have 58 days sober and that they should be excited for me. And it came time for them to, like, drink, and I was like, oh, my gosh, like, I should probably drink, too, you know? And they were like, wait a minute, aren't you in AA? And I'm like, no, I can just pick up a white chip tomorrow. Like, I'll get back on track. the next day, you know. And I don't know, they thought I was crazy by the end of that night, but I drank. And I went home, and I like set my alarm off in my house. Like, my mom was like questioning me like crazy, and I didn't tell her for like a week. And I was telling my mom one sobriety date and my sponsor another sobriety date, and I was like, I just got to go out one more time and get it right, all cleared path. And oh, it was crazy. You know, but that was my last relapse. And I eventually had to come clean to my mom. And it was like when I had like 30 days that I came clean to her, I think. And I don't know, I got to this place where I was like, I know I need the steps. I need the steps. I need to finish the steps. And that's the only thing that I felt like was going to help. And I don't know where I heard that. It might have like seeped in at Red Door, but that's what I heard. And so I switched sponsors, and I got with the sponsor I have now, and we went right through the steps. I think I was done in like 60 days maybe, you know, and it was great because I finally had a defense, you know, like I finally had something between me and my next relapse, and that turned out to be God, you know. And up until this point, I feel like I believed, but I wasn't like relying, you know, and I didn't know what it meant to rely on God. I couldn't even grasp the idea, you know, and I barely have the idea down, you know. I just know that even if I have blind faith, I'm going to be okay, you know. And there were many instances within the next couple of weeks where people were trying to, you know, party with me still, and I would call my sponsor before I did it instead of after, trying to convince her I was an alcoholic. And I don't know, like, I started to just follow her around, and I started to do what she did, and I started to have this mindset of what would my sponsor do, because I couldn't tell you what the next right thing to do was. I couldn't tell you at all, you know, so I was just like, what would Lindsay do? And that carried me through for a little while, you know, and but I was still kind of running my own life, and I was still kind of doing my own thing, and I would, like, make a mistake and then go back to her and be like, what was the direction you gave me on that again? Because I just did my own thing again. And I think it was about like nine or 10 months sober that I just started to realize that she was right the first time, you know, and that the direction she gave me was what I should have done first. And I still struggle with that, you know. And I don't know, like I get into this place where I'm good for a while, I'm praying every day, I'm doing inventories, and then I'm self-reliant because I think I did this. And I didn't do this, you know what I mean? Against my own will, in spite of myself, I'm sober today. Because if it was up to me, I wouldn't have been. Absolutely not, you know? And I got right involved with service. And that was a big part of why I was sober. This group is so keen on service, you know? And I'd be stacking chairs, resentful that I was stacking chairs and talking to people I didn't want to talk to. And, you know, for a while, when I'd come to this group, I would just say things to cut you off so I wouldn't have to talk to you anymore. And, like, I can distinctly remember one instance when, like, one of my pigeon sisters come up to me and she'd be like, hey, how you doing? Da-da-da-da, like, all in my face. And I'm like, sup? You know, like, it's so rude, like, to not respond. But, like, I didn't want you to talk to me. You know, I just wanted to be left alone and, like, blend in. And today I'm, like, one of those people that's, like, in your face. You know, like, I'm, like, all in people's faces when they're new. I'm like, you have a sponsor? Where are you at in the steps? Is this your home group? You know, you should make this your home group. And it's like I'm on fire, you know, but it's not constant, you know, and it's typically only constant when I'm praying and when I'm working with others on a regular basis on a personal level and when I'm doing inventories and getting honest with my sponsor. And by no means do I have this thing down at all, you know, because I get in places where I want to drink and I don't. You know, and if you can sum up my sobriety, it's just been taking actions I didn't want to take, you know, and I was grateful for the results, you know, because just by putting in a little bit of effort, I'm blessed with a great life, you know, and it's none of my own doing. And I don't know, just to sum up, to finish with this, like, I don't know, like, I owe Alcoholics Anonymous my life, you know, and my mom was talking to me the other day, and it was one of those days where I was contemplating leaving AA. And she was like, can you do something for me? And I was like, what? And she was like, can you picture your life right now without AA and tell me what you see? And I was like, disaster. Absolute disaster. You know? And that's true. And I don't know why it works. And I don't know why Alcoholics Anonymous has this effect on me, but it does. And I'm so grateful for it because I didn't even want it, you know. And today, on a good day, I do. And I try to give this back to whoever wants it, whoever doesn't want it, really. You know, and I've gone through periods in my sobriety where I was dragging people off bar stools, trying to get them sober and promoting it in college, you know, and just trying to drag people in here. And it's like, I can't, you know, and I can only help those who want it. And that's sad because, you know, if Alcoholics Anonymous offered it to people that needed it, we'd be overflowing, you know, and it's only for people that want it. So that's all I got. Thanks.